I had an interesting read over the past few nights of Bobby Tamling's autobiography. It's called Goals in My Life, and there were a lot of them. And he's popped into studio to say hello and good morning. How you keep him?
I've kept him very well.
What's it like to be a Chelsea man on Lee side after the weekend's 4-0 thrashing of Man U?
We don't see many of the red shirts around when there's a game like that. Do a hospitality at Chelsea, so I watch all their home games. And we were in a party from Cork this weekend, and we had two Man U fans with us. And
very
really,
depressed.
We really feel sorry for them. I'm genuine in that, because they...
Four is too many.
Yeah. A defeat is bad enough, but that was...
There was a bit of handbags with Mourinho at the end of that match as well, wasn't there?
I think so, yeah. I think he got a little bit upset about it.
Because you guys were celebrating too much.
Yeah, yeah. And it's only natural, surely.
What's it like for you to be back, say, at the Bridge, for instance, considering that you spent so long there and scored... How many goals? 202, I think.
202, yeah. I know it's a long time. In 70 I left... But the fans are absolutely fantastic. They've been fantastic to me. I've had problems with my leg, and it was actually them who sort of made me want to fight harder to get through that. And people talk about it being a job. I hear you've got a job back at Chelsea. It's not a job, it's a pleasure.
It really
is a pleasure.
It's wonderful to be back there.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's fantastic.
How do you get on with Lampard? Because he took the record away. Although I don't think you can compare like with like, because he scored a lot of those goals from the penalty spot. You didn't take penalties.
Well, I took a few, but I didn't take them as much as what Frank scored 49, and I think I scored 15. I could say I hated him, but I don't. I actually... he's one hell of a nice guy.
Really is.
Very genuine. And we got on very well.
And he writes a beautiful foreword. His foreword is like a chapter in the book.
I was going to say, forewords that I've ever read were only a sort of a paragraph long.
But
I reckon if he'd written another two pages, I might have been Prime Minister.
Or beatified. Or canonised or something.
Yeah.
But if you look at the game now, right, and I know there's a part of the book where you talk about some of the changes you would like to make to soccer, particularly, the handball and the theatrics and the penalty area and all this messing with the players. But if you look at when you were playing, it was for small money and it was a very hard game. But it was hugely popular even back then, but there was no money in it. When you compare that to now, I remember asking Ian Rush this a couple of months back, and he said, hang on a second, we were paid big money even back then, but you guys weren't.
No.
You didn't even get paid when you weren't playing.
No. I can tell you that up to the 60s, there was a cap on money wages. £20 was the top wage in the up to the 60s until we threatened to go on strike. And then it lifted, but it didn't. It was free then. The clubs could pay what they wanted to pay you, but it was still only sort of two or three times the wage of an average carpenter, plumber.
Yeah.
So we weren't on great money, but
what do you think of it now?
Out of control, I'm afraid. That people sort of say, oh, they're jealous and all that. I wouldn't even dream of wanting to play now. To the day that we played.
Why?
Because we play for the love of the game.
Will you suggest they don't now?
I think money has a big part to play in where they play. And we enjoyed the company of the fans. We weren't that much different. We weren't any different to the fans. We were sort of from families ordinary families.
Working class lads.
Ordinary guys who got a dream come true. I mean, that's how I always class the life I had, a dream come true. And so we knew what they felt. And now, when you look at the money that they earn to the average man, you just can't compare it. And in our day, if you weren't playing well, the crowd would be calling out, get stuck in, more effort. But, they can't do that. you know, like, because the lads can't do it on the field.
Yeah.
You know, the game has changed so dramatically that a lot of people from our era, you know, the spectators, have lost the interest, you know, that the game used to produce for them.
Yeah, of course, the television would have a lot to do with that, and, you know, the use of Sky Sports and, you know, multi-platforms to view games. But if you look at your time back then and the money you were on, you captained Chelsea at the age of, what, something like 21?
21.
You went on to have a very long career. You also, I think, had three England caps, isn't that right?
Three England caps.
Which are now buried out in the Kinsale Road landfill site. What the hell are they doing out there?
Well, they were my youngest son was looking after them. He loved all that. I didn't mind him having it. He was very proud of his dad, and still is. And but he met up with a young lady, and I don't think she really knew what they were.
They were just like her dirty old mouldy caps.
They looked like a high school cap.
That's right.
Yeah, with a tassel.
Schoolboys.
And they got damp. And they, you know, like, were stuck away in a cupboard, and they went, you know, mouldy. And so she threw them out. She threw them in the dustbin. And that's why they're on the Kinsale Road somewhere.
When I was reading that part of the book, actually, I got thinking, I bet you that the landfill site on the Kinsale Road is full of all sorts of treasure that got thrown out by mistake. Yeah. You know, not your three English caps alone, but jewellery, money. Yeah. You know, people bury stuff in mattresses.
You can see how it happened, like, you know. And, you know, like, I'd never even thought of approaching the English FA about trying to get them replaced. But someone said, look, you've got the best guy here in Chelsea. He was one of the directors. So I just sort of mentioned it to him in passing, really. And a couple of months later, Lineker was in the director's box and presented them.
You got replacements?
Yeah, I've got three to, you know, like, well, and, you know, like, they're hung up on the wall, like, you know.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
But as you came to the end of your career, a change of climate and a change of clubs involved you coming to Cork and playing for Celtic, wasn't it?
Yeah, I had a bad injury. I had a Achilles tendon problem, and the specialist who I was seeing advised me that, he said, really, I should advise you to retire. He said, because your ankle's not going to stand up to the pressure you're put it under.
So you needed softer ground.
That's what he said. Yeah. He said,
and it rains here all the time, so the ground is soft.
Well, I was sat next to a gentleman called Paddy Mulligan, Irish international lad in the Crystal Palace dressing room, and he advised me to go to Ireland. And I said, could you fix something up? And he did. Very nice of him. He fixed me up with, as he told me on the day, a team second in the league.
That's funny, actually. Yeah. You tell that well.
And when I got over here, I said that in front of the people that I was meeting, your directors and so forth, and I said, I'm glad to be joining the side second in the league. And they said, well, we hope to make some progress with all the signings we've made. And I thought, that don't sound like second in the league. And I said, where are you in the league then? And they said, second from bottom. I never let Paddy forget that moment.
All right, but it didn't deter you. And you had a good career here. And I think you were the man who brought best to Lisa, didn't you, for a few games? Was it true that he was on £1,000 a game?
Yes. And I'm really proud of that fact. Like, you know, not the fact that he was on £1,000 a game, but that he came over to us here in Cork.
He didn't play very well, though, did he?
He was he wasn't at the end of his career, because after that time he went back and played for Fulham, you know, like, and he done well for them. But he was in a stage where he was only just starting to get back to fitness.
And it had a huge difference when it came to attendances. I mean, I believe when Best was on board, he was talking in the book about crowds going from 1,500 to 15,000.
Yeah.
Would you get 15,000 in there?
And, well, in those days, there was no stands. So, you know, like, you
crammed in.
Any ground that, you know, sort of no stands, terracing and so forth, you'll always get more people in than the seating
Room. Yeah.
But what made it so really great now is that so many people talk that I've seen Georgie Best play here in Cork, and they're as pleased as punch, yeah, even now at this stage.
Yeah, yeah. You have one regret about that, though. In the book, you say you took a penalty that you should have let him take, and then you scoffed it. Do you have sleepless nights?
I can hardly reply to that question without laughing. It's the most embarrassing moment of my life on the football field. I was actually in goal. Our goalkeeper had been injured, and we had no substitute goalkeepers. We had no subs, I don't think, at that era. And I was the chosen candidate to go in goal. And so I was right at the other end of the field. We were winning 1-0 against Bohemians, and they were very high up in the league. And we got a penalty in the last minute, well, what I thought was the last minute. And I was a penalty taker, so I was a goalkeeper, penalty taker.
Oh, well, they don't blame you then.
and like a fool, I run the length of the pitch to take the penalty. And the worst thing about it, it was bad enough if I'd scored, but I missed the goal. I didn't even hit the goal. And then I was scampering back the full length of the field. And I thought afterwards, I should have let Georgie take that. And it pleased the thousands of people that were in the ground.
You still remember it to this day. Oh, I mean, there's a lot of other aspects to your life that you don't really dwell on in the book. You know, family life, loved ones, your time with the Jehovah's Witnesses. Is that for another day?
No, it's not for another day. It's I was in the Witnesses. I joined the Witnesses after a long time of study. My wife was a witness when we met, and it didn't really interest me. It didn't take much of my time, but over the years when we had children, discussions made more sense perhaps to me in that time. And I joined them, and I come to Ireland as a witness. But over a period of time, I sort of fell out of love with it.
Yeah. Not before you spent a time, I believe, working in KC's in Douglas.
Yeah.
Were you working in the
bit of everything? I was a fryer.
Were you?
Yeah.
Because that was very much run, and perhaps it still is, I don't know, by people who are only... can work there as witnesses.
Well, most of them.
Yeah.
Most of them were witnesses. And it was the way of the gentleman who owned it, of helping them survive.
Oh, no, go for it. Yeah, yeah.
And he knew them well. Yeah, I was a fryer. But the period of time didn't last that long, you know. When I fell out of love, the one thing that always deeply worried me, but not a lot of people knew about it, was that the blood issue.
Now, operations or emergencies.
Yeah, yeah. I could have done that. I could have said no blood for myself, but I couldn't have said it for none of them.
I know. Life goes on. It was a part of your life.
Yeah.
And of course, we're all on a journey. Where's the journey taking you now? You're still here in Cork. You're settled down, living in Crosshaven, enjoying life.
I just enjoy life. Probably haven't got long to, you know, at the age I'm at. But
how old are you now?
75.
Oh, for God's sake. Another 15 years in you yet.
I hope so, because I'm really enjoying life at the moment.
Well, listen, long may it continue. It'll be a big seller amongst Chelsea fans and sports fans in general, I believe.
Well, I hope so.
Not just clearly here, but much in the UK.
I think I wrote it for the fans.
Yeah.
You know, like in the sense
it's a fans book.
Yeah. The early part of the book is all about, you know, like how children... you know, have all got dreams, how they can make those dreams come true, and, you know, sort of enjoy, you know, like, it's not a war. Two teams meeting on the football field is not a war. It's a sport.
Mm.
And that's how it should be played and watched.
Yeah, long may it continue. Bobby, thanks for coming in. I'm clean out of time. I know that there's a launch and it's open to the public on Thursday night, I believe, at Suit Distributors. And you're looking for many people, including ex-Cork Celtic and Cork Hibs fans, players to come along on the night.
Well, usually the only time we meet them is in a sad situation, someone's funeral. But this, I hope, is a lot happier and,
okay.
You know, like okay. The atmosphere would be nice.
Okay, well, enjoy that. Thursday night. And mind yourself, and thanks for coming in. We've got some copies of Tamling's book to give away, Goals in My Life, signed copies to give away on 1850 104 106. And I'll remind you about the book launch, which is happening on Thursday night at 7:30 at Suit Distributors at Ballycoreen. I'll remind you of that in the morning.
The Neil Prendeville Show with Nissan. You'll never look back with our pioneering innovation behind you. Red FM.